want to just fill in the envelope, you're welcome to do that and get ahead of the game. Let's see. Thanks for listening, and we'll turn it back over to the working class here. WFT, Champaign-Urbana, listener-sponsored and volunteer-operated radio.
Next Wednesday.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the April 17, 2000 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WFT 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide live at www.weft.org. Views and opinions expressed here are solely ours. Do not represent anyone else at WEFT. And here's Tom with some acknowledgments of some of our underwriters.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by you, the listeners of WEFT, and by the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's new poem for this week is entitled Build Olympian, and you'll hear it first here in the Illinois World Labor Hour. Also here with us today is co-host Bob Pelesny, our technical expert and advisor, who will have some news and banner for us as well. Also here is the co-founder of the Illinois Labor Hour, Bill Gorell, and we have some very special guests in the studio, Anthony Rayson and Mike Pulaski, from Southside of Chicago. They're going to be talking about one of their passions and projects, which is basically in communication with prisoners all over the country and helping them publish various zines, as well as some really terrific artwork. And anyway, here's Tom to kick off this week's Workers' Interest News.
Senate Democrats won an initial vote last Monday to restore unemployment benefits to hundreds of thousands of jobless people, despite Republican criticism that it would add $9 billion to the national debt. The 60-34 win killed a GOP filibuster against debating the measure, which would extend jobless benefits through May 5th. Senators in both parties blamed each other for allowing the programs to lapse last week, leaving several hundred thousand people who have been out of work for more than 6 months without federally financed benefits. Republicans blocked the extension measure last month, but Monday's vote buys time while House-Senate talks continue on a far larger measure to extend benefits through the end of the year. At issue is unemployment compensation for more than 400,000 people whose benefits lapsed but who would have been eligible to reapply for additional weeks of benefits if the program's authority had not ended on April 5th. More than 5 million people continue to receive the extended benefits, but 200,000 people per week stand to lose them if the political impasse continues. Bob?
The University of Wisconsin canceled its licensing agreement with Nike Incorporated last Friday, becoming the first university to take that step over concerns about the company's treatment of workers in Honduras. Chancellor Biddy Martin said Nike hasn't done enough to help workers collect severance payments they are owed at two factories that abruptly closed last year. Wisconsin's code of conduct requires the 500 companies that make products bearing its name or logos to take responsibility for the subcontractor's actions. Its contract with Nike generated about $49,000 in royalty income for the university last year. Anti-sweatshop activists said they hoped Wisconsin's decision would resonate at several other universities across the country where students are pushing for similar actions and put pressure on Nike to fix the Honduran situation. Nike hired the factories located in Chelomo and San Pedro Sula as suppliers to produce apparel. They closed without notice in January 2009, with the workers being owed $2.6 million in severance payments required under Honduran law. It says Nike has not developed and does not intend to develop meaningful ways of addressing the plight of displaced workers and their families in Honduras, Chancellor Martin said. It has not presented clear long-range plans to prevent or respond to similar problems in the future. For this combination of reasons, we have decided to end our relationship for now.
Okay, Bob. United Mine Workers President Cecil Roberts says that Massey Energy Company continued inaction on safety violation at its Upper Big Branch mine, where 29 West Virginia coal miners died in an April 5th explosion. In a speech at the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO convention, Roberts said, if there's any justice in America, U.S. Marshals should go to where he lives, get him handcuffed, put him in chains, take him to jail, and set his fine at $40 million. He told the delegates the Mine Safety and Health Administration inspectors had shut the mine down over and over again. They brought the men outside, they brought them to a safe place, but as soon as they left, the same thing happened again and again. They didn't correct the violations. In 2009, the Mine Safety Health Administration proposed nearly $1 million in fines for more than 450 safety violations at the non-union plant. Just last month, the Mine Safety Health Administration cited the mine for 57 safety violations. In a statement on Tuesday, Representative George Miller, Democratic California chairman of the House Education and Labor Committee, which will hold hearings on the Upper Big Branch disaster and Massey's safety record, said, every miner who goes to work each day must be able to return home safely to their families at the end of their shift, and Congress has an obligation to ensure that remains the case.
This week, apparently, Rush Limbaugh was lying on the air. What else is new? Anyway, what he was saying was he was asking why the union didn't help keep the miners safe. And he was claiming that the union was in the mine. Well, actually, what had happened was that 85 miners had to be hired back by the Massey company, even though they were union members, and they were hired back and working in another mine in another county. So actually, there was no organized union or any union members in the mine where the accident was.
Blankenship has been very anti-union in that mine for years. He has a history of keeping the unions out of that mine, telling people, that the miners, that if they had a union in there, they'd all be out of a job. He's threatened them all there.
I saw some video of him at a tea party, and he was wearing a red, white, and blue American flag cap and the shirt.
Yep.
You saw that too?
Yeah.
You know, and man, that dude was just lying.
It was a Labor Day rally that he hosted.
Yeah.
And he flew in on his private helicopter and flew out afterwards.
Well, as usual,
that guy Blankenship is a piece of cake.
Yeah, and as usual, Rush Limbaugh is, a distorter and a liar, so there's nothing new there. Tom?
The Illinois House of Representatives has approved legislation that will allow schools to drop one day of classes. Students would not miss any time in school because the four in-session days would be extended to balance the hours per week. With Fridays or Mondays off, school transportation costs would drop greatly, along with utility bills and costs for hourly workers, such as cafeteria cooks and custodians. Although the vote was not unanimous, lawmakers overwhelmingly supported the bill once they understood the change for individual schools in the state would be totally voluntary. Representative Bill Black, a Danville Republican, sponsored the measure, which passed by an overwhelming margin and is now awaiting action in the Senate. Representative Karen Yarbrough, a Democrat from Maywood, voted against it, saying, "Parents simply are not ready for this. I want to expand school, and this, the bill, is going in the wrong direction," said Mike Griffith, an Education Commission of the State Senior Policy Advisor. "People get really excited about it and think they're going to cut their costs by 20% because they're dropping one day, but it doesn't work that way. You're still going to have to heat the building, and you're still going to have to purchase textbooks and computers and a whole lot of other necessities."
Okay, and related to Dave's story there about Massey Energy and safety, here's a story from the International Trade Union Confederation, and they want to announce that on the annual International Commemoration Day on the 28th of April, workers and trade unions around the world will commemorate those who have lost their lives, were injured, or fell ill due to unsafe, unhealthy, or unsustainable work. This year, the focus of activities is on the role trade unions play in making work safer. The International Trade Union Confederation has chosen "Unions Make Work Safer" as our common theme for this day of action, and is calling on its members to use this day for deepening discussions on the need for workers to have safe and sustainable working conditions and for unions to step up their efforts in fighting for safe and healthy workplaces for all, said Guy Ryder, General Secretary of the ITUC. The most updated information shows that there are almost 360,000 fatal occupational accidents in any year and almost 2 million fatal work-related diseases. Every day, more than almost 1 million workers get hurt because of accidents, and on average, 5,330 workers die because of work-related diseases. Unions play a critical role in stopping this workplace carnage, said Ryder. This 28th of April is the time to put occupational health and safety back on the agenda of governments and enterprises and show it as a key element of a sustainable future for our people. And the ITUC represents 176 million workers in 155 countries and territories.
Okay. Okay. On Thursday, in 40 cities across the country, Jobs with Justice activists and allies took action to demand good jobs and a way to pay for them. Activists held rally calling on Congress to create millions of good new jobs, tax the Wall Street speculators who broke our economy, and rein in the big banks and protect consumers. A tax on the speculators of the Wall Street casino could put 3 million people to work fixing our infrastructure, teaching our children, making our factories more sustainable, and improving our public services. Tell Congress, tax Wall Street to pay for jobs. For 30 years, corporate CEOs and Wall Street speculators have put the squeeze on workers with globalization, privatization, and union busting. They use their rising profits to lobby Congress for tax breaks for the rich, banking deregulation, and cuts to consumer protections. They invented unscrupulous mortgage and investing practices, turning our financial system into a casino. When their speculation didn't pay off, they got Congress to bail them out to the tune of $15,000 for every household in America. And you can take action on this alert at www.unionvoice.org. And so funny, we saw so much in the media about the Tea Party protests on Thursday, but nothing on this these protests in over 40 cities by Jobs with Justice.
Governor Pat Quinn has signed a law giving tax credits to small businesses that hire new full-time employees. The law Quinn signed last Tuesday is for a $2,500 credit on the state withholding tax and is for businesses with 50 or fewer employees that hire full-time employees beginning on July 1st of 2010. To qualify, the individual's new job has to last for at least a year and has to pay at least $25,000 a year. A lot of small business owners, including a group that joined Quinn at the bill signing ceremony, are saying that this should expand their companies and enable them to hire more workers. Employers must apply for the tax credit as soon as each new employee is hired. The total amount of tax credits in the state is to be capped at $50 million. And I have a brief MPSA here. According to the decision by the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District Board, all bus rides in Champaign-Urbana on April 22nd, which is Earth Day, will be free. Said MTD Marketing Director Jan Kajowski, "We think it's a good way to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Earth Day, and it will give people the opportunity to try the MTD for free, and if they like it, maybe they'll try it again, and we'll have some new customers." MTD officials estimated the revenue loss to be around $1,700, that figure being based on the number of cash fare riders on a typical Thursday in February, usually the highest month for MTD ridership. The regular MTD fare is $1, but most riders nowadays have some sort of pass or dash card. Similar free MTD rides were offered on numerous Earth Day holidays in the past, but this is the first time it's happened in quite a few years.
Matt, I got a comment on the tax credit story, and I know there's a similar thing in the federal level too. And I am very skeptical of these things. I think they're just there to get Republican votes, because that's the only thing that they want to hear about is tax cuts.
Exactly.
What I would rather see is that, what was it, $50 million on the limit? What I would rather see is a $50 million project here at the U of I, which would actually employ people. I mean, look, if you got a small business and you're going to supposed to hire somebody full time, is $2,500 break going to be something that gets you to do it on something that's going to cost you $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in a year, plus what goes on the years after that?
Yeah.
I think it's ridiculous. But I want to see the story next year that tells us how many businesses took advantage of that and how many people got jobs.
Yeah, you'll never see that story, I guarantee you, unless it's done on the alternative media.
Yeah.
Okay, I got a story here that says, reclaim the history of May Day for the working class. That was the message of a April 8th organizational meeting for the May Day March and Rally that will take place May 1st in Manhattan's Foley Square. Dozens of union locals, including SEIU 32BJ and 1199, the United Federation of Teachers, Transport Workers Union Local 100, and Peace and Community Groups have already endorsed it. The demands are clear: an economic policy in the interest of the working class majority, the right to unionize and bargain collectively for all workers, full rights for immigrant workers, and jobs for all. All of this is part of the proposed platform for the May Day March and Rally. The date is fitting for a rally that will highlight the needs of working people and immigrants. In 1884, the U.S. labor movement set May 1st, 1886, as the day on which the 8-hour workday was to become a standard. On that date, workers across the country, around 500,000, went on a general strike to demand the change in working hours. Rallies took place across the country on that and following days. Then on May 4th, 1886, a rally in Chicago's Haymarket Square was disrupted by a bomb thrown by provocateurs, probably from the police. Police used this as an excuse to riot, killing at least a dozen people. They arrested the main rally organizers, and 8 of them were put on trial for murder, though there was never any evidence presented that they were guilty or anything other than fighting for workers' rights. 4 of those tried were executed. 1 committed suicide in his jail cell. Since
that
then,
one that committed suicide, he was the one that went to light a cigar, which mysteriously had a blasting cap in it.
Is that true? Okay.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
Yeah, and we were wondering how the prisoner was able to get a blasting cap into his jail cell. And
inside of a cigar.
Yeah.
Well, he was a carpenter, you know. They're pretty nice.
Yeah.
Okay, since then, in commemoration of the rally, its martyrs, and the fight for the 8-hour day, May 1st has, in most countries, been declared a holiday, celebrating the working class and honoring its struggles. And Dave?
Actually, Bill.
Bill? Yeah, I got a couple of local stories here. The first one is out in Monticello, there is a Pizza Hut, which I pretty well boycott anyway because Pizza Hut always builds non-union. Well, anyway, there's a big kerfluffle on Facebook with people around Monticello right now, and there is a new group called Boycott the Monticello Pizza Hut, which has over 600 members after only being formed, I believe, 2 days ago.
Oh, wow.
And the
unhappy people there.
Now, if you drive by this Pizza Hut, what you're going to see is a big sign out front that says under new management. And apparently the new management is not that good. There is a woman who has worked there for 19 years. And the word is that she has a workers' compensation claim against the business and that she had been humiliated in front of her coworkers by the new management. And I believe that they are trying to fire her. So, anyway, if you're on Facebook, join Boycott the Monticello Pizza Hut. And if you're not on Facebook, just boycott the Monticello Pizza Hut. And the second story, which is sort of similar in location, because this guy, he lived a lot of his life around the Monticello area. In fact, I used to ride the school bus with him when I was in grade school to the B-Ment school before they moved over by Cisco. And that is the business manager of Local 703, Mark Cannon, died.
Laborers Union?
Yeah, Laborers Local 703. Mark Cannon died yesterday at 6:14 a.m. He is 57 years old, and the funeral arrangements are at the Mackey Funeral Home in Monticello. Excuse me. I knew Mark and, well, his family all my life, and I do have to say that Mark always treated me really well. Now, one of his brothers, but Mark, he's always been really good to me, both riding the school bus and as business manager for Local 703. And I'm sorry to see that he's gone.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Okay, and also a local story here. The attorney for Jeshwin Manning Carter said he doesn't know if the teen will speak with authorities about what happened on, that's federal authorities, about what happened on October day last year when his friend was killed by a Champaign police officer. Local Attorney Alfred Ivory's comments came Tuesday afternoon, shortly after Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz dismissed criminal charges against Manning Carter, 16, of Champaign. He had been charged with aggravated resisting a peace officer in connection with an encounter with Champaign Police Chief R.T. Finney and Officer Dan Norbitz in the backyard of 906 West Vine Street in Champaign on October 9th. Kewan Carrington, 15, of Champaign, was killed by a shot from Norbert's gun during a struggle to get Mr. Carrington to comply with police commands. Manning Carter was struggling with Finney, according to the Champaign police. The officers were responding to what they were told was a burglary in progress at the home. It turns out that that Kewan Carrington, the 15-year-old youth who was killed by Champaign police, lived at this home. And they had forgotten his key and was trying to get in to the back door. Julia Reitz, after saying that she was dropping the charges, she stated the reason she did it was because him, surviving youth, Manning Carter, and his mother went to a six-week Parenting with Love and Limits program.
Oh, they had to give something up to do it.
Well, here's the real interesting thing about the story, if you read between the lines. Twice in this article, Julia Reitz is quoted as emphatically stating, "This decision is not based on all the petitions I received. It's not based on an inability to prove the charges. It's based on Jeshwin following through with what I asked him to do," Reitz said. Huh. Well, give me a break. I have never seen in my whole life in this community, under various state's attorneys, anyone being let off of felony charges because they went through a six-week parenting and love program of something of that sort, and that's just more of the same stuff. But I mean, I'm just hoping, and so are a lot of the people in this community, that Manning Carter is not too traumatized by this incident. We're hoping he'll give testimony as to the federal authorities about what happened, because we all know that one of the tactics the police do is when they've got a witness they don't like, they'll put up bogus charges on them to get them to shut up at least for a while, and that's what they were able to accomplish here for at least 6 months. I'm just hoping that the feds will come through on an investigation, but of course we probably don't want to hold our breath too hard on that one. Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. On a very tangentially related thing, I am very glad that Jerry Swihart, is his first name Jerry?
Yeah. Okay.
That Swihart is not sheriff anymore. I mean, the dude, have you seen the video?
Or he spoke out at the Tea Party event here. Yeah, that was picked up by...
Yeah, he doesn't think Obama was born in the United States.
He was born on a bar stool in the Esquire.
we'll have to save that for a future...
Which one?
The views expressed...
The views expressed here
strictly those of the speaker. WEFT 90.1 FM does not take an editorial stance.
Yes, but Tom Thomas does.
Okay. All right, we're going to hear a little music. We're going to come back with Tom Thomas's poem of the week and get to our guests here in just a moment.
State line. Men and boys were digging coal deep down in the Kentucky mines. All day they never see the sun. All night they love moonshine run. Never give a thought to carry a gun. Just do it when it's gotta be done.
They got you living in a four room shack. If you even wanna call it that, you can hear the train through the cracks. When you're living on the tracks.
Bloody Heart of 1935. When the Union made the call, those who stood paid the price.
Talk about a dreadful night.
Okay, we're at that point in the Labor Hour program of the Cultural Corner with Tom Thomas's new poem of the week, Build Olympian.
We need more room to coexist for our society to grow. We need to stretch across this land, and stable wages need to know. The simple things that people need to get them to another day are becoming harder to get with each worker's shriveling pay. To grow, we're needing to expand by building roads across our land to carry commerce to us all as for our dreams we strive to stand. Olympian could bring a dream of businesses and jobs for all. It is a road we need to have finished before another fall. It is a road that can bring jobs and money to our community, to feed our kids and pay our bills and foster social unity. To open up Olympian from Champaign to Urbana's Plain can only bring prosperity that we may never lose again. We need the jobs. We need the work. We need to open land and pond. We need to build Olympian, for it could be a magic wand. Build Olympian was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on April 16, 2010, and was first recited live April 17, 2010 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. And we've got some public service announcements here. First of all, on today, Saturday, April 17th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., so it's going on right now, the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, 202 South Broadway, downtown Urbana Post Office. It's a good time for spring cleaning. Bring stuff to give away and take what you need. Excess will go to service providers for the homeless in Champaign-Urbana. That's the really, really, really free market is back at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. That's going on today from 11 to 3 at 202 South Broadway, the downtown Urbana Post Office building. Also, check out tomorrow, Sunday, every Sunday, Labor's View TV from 4 to 5 p.m. on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6 with host Jim Iman, yours truly. That's Labor's View TV every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6. And pretty soon we'll be announcing a special Labor's View supplemental that will be played, aired on Urbana Public Television after 11 o'clock at night. It'll be called Live Nude Girls, about the organizing attempts and success of strippers in San Francisco.
I got a public service announcement here. Armageddon, ready to go to Springfield for Rally Day on Wednesday, April 21st. They have 200 riders and counting, and you can reserve your seat today. It says, without a change in funding, 17,000 teachers and education staff in Illinois will not be in the classroom or at their job next fall. This is reality. Just ask all your friends and colleagues who have received their pink slips. Legislators will not act for change if they don't hear from you in person. And this is your chance. Buses will depart at 8:30 a.m., that's April 21st, from two locations. One is the Henry Administration Building at 506 South Wright Street in Urbana, and the other one is the Sholem Pool Parking Lot at 2205 West Sangamon Drive in Champaign. They will head to Springfield. There's an agenda down there that they will arrive at the IEA headquarters about 10 o'clock. They walk to a rally staging point at 11 to 11:30. They have a SOS rally with speakers at the Capitol from 11:30 to 12:15. And they begin the march at 12:15. And then the return trip will start about 3 o'clock, and they'll arrive back in Champaign about 4:30. And that's April 21st. You can rally in Springfield. Bill?
Yes, on April 30th, is Tom Morello, formerly of Rage Against the Machine, will be in his persona as the Night Watchman with the Rust Belt Ramblers and Bucky Hawker, somebody who's been to Champaign, Bucky has. And this will occur at 8 p.m. at the Bottom Lounge, 1375 West Lake in Chicago. And all proceeds will go to benefit the industrial workers of the world. And if you've ever seen pictures of Tom Morello, you might realize that he always wears an IWW cap. And that's April 30th at 8 p.m. at the Bottom Lounge, 1375 West Lake in Chicago. You can get tickets at, anyway, the email address is tickets@mpshows.com.
Okay, thank you very much, Bill.
Wait a minute, Dave.
Yes.
And then there's also the Pages for Pennies spring book sale going on right now, I believe, and tomorrow. The hours are, and that is at the Independent Media Center, 202 South Broadway, the old post office in Urbana. And the hours are Saturday, 8 to 5 p.m., that's today, and tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Anyway, they're charging, well, I don't think I can believe that, but very low, I can't read that on this radio station, but very low prices for both soft covers and hardback books. And this goes to help out the Books for Prisoners program, which is a very good program. And was founded by my friend Sandra Otten, I believe.
Okay, thank you, Bill. And now we're going to get right to our guests, Anthony Rayson and Mike Pulaski from the South Chicago ABC Zine Distro. They're Southside anarchist organizers, writers, and editors. Welcome to the show, Anthony and Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, listen, man, I tell you what, I wish this was a television program actually today, because they've brought some not only some really excellent zines, that were are basically written and published by prisoners throughout the country, but also some really excellent artwork and stuff. So why don't I just go ahead and turn it over to you, start with Anthony. Let's tell us about how you, what first of all, what the ABC Zine Distro is all about and how you got started.
Okay, well, ABC stands for Anarchist Black Cross, which is a prisoner support group started after the 1905 revolution in Russia, when anarchists around the world realized that the money being sent supposedly to anarchist prisoners was funneled through the Social Democrats, the Leninists, and it wasn't going to anarchists. So they developed an independent support network for anarchist prisoners. Well, it's been going on through then since then. We've sort of taken it to another level. We use it as a springboard for free school education, using the brilliance of prisoners and... You know, it's an education street going both ways. So that's basically the purpose, is to educate indigent prisoners and to be educated by indigent prisoners. Some of the most brilliant thinkers are prisoners. So me being a writer and interested in collaborating with brilliant other writers, after going through all kinds of organizing and whatnot, I came to realize the best minds were in prison, and also this is the sort of ground zero of the struggle here at home. I have a little saying: it's the world gets bombs, but we get bars. We got 2.4 million prisoners, and a lot of them are extremely talented. You talk about artwork; a lot of these guys are in there because they tag buildings and trains. A guy just drowned the other day for doing this, being chased by the cops, as you recall. So. And it's the same thing with the thinkers, the writers. Years ago, it was literally illegal to educate slaves. Well, the same applies today. In the 13th Amendment, prisoners are legal slaves. And you take a court case all the way to the Supreme Court, and they'll say, well, according to the 13th Amendment, yes, prisoners are allowed to be treated as slaves. And they are, and it's hideous what's going on there. It's homegrown Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo Bay is going right under our nose to... basically the most brilliant young people of today.
Now, I hear a lot about communication management units that exist in a couple of federal prisons, in particular Marion, Illinois, and Terre Haute, Indiana. But it seems like you're saying that besides these communication management units, that there's restriction on prisoners' access to reading material?
Definitely. Every prison has a laundry list of reasons, some specific, some totally vague, that they use to deny any and all publications. And a lot of this is even just based on the temperament of the guard or who the publication is being sent to. It's a constant cat and mouse game with the, I call them gulag censor trolls. So yeah, it's the closer we get to the truth, the more they deny the stuff, both directions.
Yeah, something I wanted to bring up was that, you know, you were talking about how poorly people are being treated in prison, and I think that there's been great big cutbacks in things like education, vocational training, and so on and so forth, because, gee, you don't want those prisoners getting an education on your tax dollars, do you, those criminals? But there's always one thing that people need to remember, and that is that the vast majority of these people are going to get out of prison someday. They're not in there for life, and they're not in there to be killed. And I just wondered what you thought about that.
Well, prisons are the incubation of social disease. Venereal disease, hepatitis, AIDS, all these horrible diseases flare in prisons. And the medical treatment is, you get the worst hacks are the prison doctors and dentists and whatnot. And these prisoners die like flies for common undiagnosed reasons. They're callous. They don't care. I mean, it's horrible. The women prisoners have unbelievably terrible butcher-like medical services. It's an absolute outrage. And yes, you're right. 98% of the people do come out eventually. What are they going to do? They got AIDS. They got no money. They got no job. Their family doesn't want, you know.
Yeah, and they're denied public housing. It's difficult for them to get jobs.
It's a problem waiting to happen. Being thrust on them. And they scream about, oh, well, prisoners, you know, Quinn let a few prisoners go. Well, they let hundreds and thousands of prisoners in this state every day, every week go. They don't tell anybody about it.
Mm-hmm.
They've been worsened. They go to prison for a crime, and they come out a hardened criminal with, you know, all these other proclivities and anger and, you know. So what we're trying to do is finally get through to their heads, to these people, because the whole school system has been an absolute joke. I saw in a Tribune the other day, a right-wing reporter wrote a column about the failure of the voucher system, which is a Republican idea.
Mm-hmm.
The whole system is a failure. The basic reason is that these people are not being told the truth in school. They're being regimented into their roles as worker slave or a prison slave or a soldier or whatever, you know? So this is what, and it's amazing the response we've gotten coming at them with a clear anarchist perspective, genuine mutual aid and solidarity with them, a nose-to-the-grindstone attitude that can't help but be impressed by, and we attract the real thinkers to us to work with us, you know, closely. Even longtime revolutionaries like Russell Maroon Schultz or Sundiata Kole, I've done personal interviews with these guys, updated before the state kills these people off, capture their insight, and make it available for the young ones coming up, because we're coming up to a warfare situation. People need to know the truth of really what's going on.
Yeah, I have some of your zines here in front of me, actually, and I got a chance to read part of them anyway. There's one here on the revolutionary pleasure of thinking for yourself. And this is really great stuff. I mean, you talk about analysis of our society we live in and what's wrong with it.
It's updated analysis of what is actually happening in front of our face, that we're so clouded by the cacophony of noise on the iPod and the computer and the television and the cell phone. People don't know what the hell's going on, really. Yeah, there's bombarded by images. But like in the early Pokemon days when the Japanese parents were falling down because they're being bombarded by the imagery. That's what's happened to us, but we don't even realize it. In the meantime, we're going with the flow. You know, we've got genocidal wars all over the world, including in this country. You know, there's a genocidal war going on in every black community in this country.
Mm-hmm.
They got lorries of Gestapo picking them up every day.
Also, a large percentage of the prisoners in the prison system, both state and federal, from what I understand, are there for nonviolent drug offenses.
Yeah, exactly, which is a social problem, not a crime.
Well, indeed, also.
And they exacerbate the whole thing. Now we got this whole Mexican war, which open warfare in Mexico is morphing into what's going on in Chicago now.
Yeah, I just want to read from this little zine, The Revolutionary Pleasure of Thinking for Yourself. People are kept from analyzing the basic nature, the totality of everyday life by the media forces, including consumer surveys and public opinion polls. More details, the spectacular trifles, the phony controversies and ridiculous scandals. Are you for or against trade unions, cruise missiles, identity cards? What's your opinion of soft drugs, jogging, UFOs, progressive taxation, Michael Jackson's latest nose job, the royal family's sexual relations? They continue by saying these are diversions, false issues. The only issue for us is how we live. This is great stuff. And another one I have here is it's a three book set, and the title of it is The Last Act of the Circus Animals. This is right in the vein of George Orwell's, Animal Farm, and it's even better in a lot of ways because it really goes to the whole sort of power relationships that currently exist in the United States, using circus animals and even the circus employees like the ringmaster as analogies.
Well, exactly. These are the modern day George Orwells and George Jacksons and real powerful thinkers, Kropotkin, the analysts, some of the political analysis is unbelievable, and the psychological analysis from these brilliant prisoners. One in particular, his name is Talib Y. Rashid. He just got out after 30 years. Unbelievable. Anyway, he writes, he analyzes the psychology of criminalization and how to overcome recidivism, but from a genuine, real perspective. He realizes this is a horrible, ultra, you know, capitalist country, and all these things happen, and people are criminalized in a way, but he helps them develop the understanding and the tools that they're going to need to hopefully overcome it. So.
Okay, listen, we're going to take a real quick musical break here. We're going to come back with Mike, and I think he's got some letters, some snippets from various letters from prisoners he might want to read, and also I want to kind of just briefly ask him kind of how he got involved in this as well. So we'll be right back. Okay, that was Police and Thieves by The Clash, and now I'd like to kind of introduce our other guest here in the studio, Mike Pulaski. Mike, welcome to the Labor Hour.
Thank you.
Okay, so how did you get involved with Anthony on this project?
I started working with him about 6 years ago. We were introduced by a mutual friend, and I was just glad to participate in such a hands-on activity and what I consider enriching and rewarding by some of the letters that we get.
Okay, would you like to read just a few of those for us? Or actually, you know, parts of them anyway?
Sure, and these are just recent ones because we get about 12 letters every day to our P.O. Box, which we'll give out later. Or I can give it now. It's P.O. Box 721, Homewood, Illinois, and the zip code there is 60430. If anybody wants, you know, catalogs or specific zines, they can write to us or send us stamp donations.
Okay, do you have a website by any chance, or...?
We don't have a website, but my whole catalog of zines, all the zines that I've ever distributed are available through DePaul. They have a zine library, so you just Google the Anthony Rasin zine collection.
Okay. Very good.
Okay, and here's parts of a couple letters. This card is just to show my appreciation, not only mine, though, but all of our brothers and sisters. What you teach, I teach. What I teach, they learn. We learn together. They are scared. The oppressing government robots. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's hope so.
Keep up the good work. And here's another one. Another brother that happened to have your info. So here I am. I truly thank the Creator, Father above, for brothers like yourself. Because without you, I'll still be stuck on stupid and on some ignorant nonsense. But you helped open up my eyes to the awareness of being a black man is all about. Always loved who I was, but now cherish what and who we are as people of color. So thank you for turning this gangster into a man. And that means a lot to me because when these people do get out, I don't want them to resume the lifestyle of you know, gangbanging and drive-by shooting. I want them to mentor the younger people coming up in their communities, you know, to teach them their history and possibilities and economics. And here is another one. Hello, my name is Bradley. I am more the theory than action because it is my contribution as a white male from upper middle class background. I've gotten great material from this distro before, and the last couple times I got it for free. I would like zines from you folks, and I look forward to them more than anything. Like Anthony said, the United States has 2.3 million people locked down, and that represents 25% of the world's total incarcerated population, even though the United States is 5% of the population.
Wow.
So I do blame a lot of that on the drug war.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we have the largest per capita prison population in the world. I think maybe China is the only one that has more people.
No, we have more than China.
We have more than China.
We have more than China.
I think five times as many people, or 4.5, and we still have much more than China. The closest one is Russia.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Plus, it costs $50,000 a year, $40,000 a year to incarcerate somebody. That breaks down to $700-$800 a week.
Yeah, and you'd think that they'd be, you know, that the society would be more interested in putting that money into education and prevention programs, and basically just promoting policies in this country that have basically, you know, where people can earn a living wage so they don't have to change, you know, turn to crime. Now, of course, we know there, you know, in any society where the disparities between, you know, the poor and the wealthy are narrower, there's still crime, but it's not nearly the rate in a country like the United States that has a large, you know, gap between the poorest person and the richest person. And you know, it's interesting because you know, you listen to a lot of gangster rap, and it seems like that's what's being promoted, especially back in the 90s and stuff. And you think about it, I mean, this kind of fits in with the whole a lot of the ideology of the people that run this country, that basically, the you know, a lot of the attitudes in that music is that I want mine, I'll get mine, however, whatever it takes, you know, you get in my way, that kind of thing.
Well,
I'm excluding groups, of course, like Public Enemy, which is very politically focused.
Right. Well, it's a reflection of what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the underside mirror image of what society projects is mm-hmm. what is important in life.
Yes.
You know, guns and movies, it's all guns, join the government and, you know, get accumulating hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's insane. But this is, so this is their attempt to realize that insane American dream on the mean streets of the black ghettos.
Mm-hmm. Or Mexican ghettos, or even poor white you know, areas of the country.
Well,
you know,
and they just changed the law a little bit about cocaine and crack.
Okay.
It was 100-1 as far as the sentencing goes. 100-1.
So in other words, a gram of crack cocaine would get you 100 times the sentence that a gram of powder cocaine would.
The threshold for that same sentence. And these are mandatory sentencing. So a lot of these kids on the street that are forced to be out there, they're bang, 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 $10 sentence, like nothing,
mm-hmm.
for a little rock of crack in their pocket. Meanwhile, the guy in the Board of Trade's got 3 ounces of cocaine. Well, he orders his way out of it.
Sure.
You know, that's justice in this country. The further you go toward death row, the darker it gets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a penultimate racist institution of America, and the whole way the prisons were developed were hand in glove with slavery.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Even through Reconstruction, that was, they did use the 13th Amendment to keep slavery alive. They just suck all the workers out of prison and assign them to the plantation owners.
Well,
it was even worse because they could work them to death. They didn't even have to buy them.
Yeah, and it seems like we're returning to that in what some people have termed the prison industrial complex. You see these various private corporations that have private prisons that have popped up in the last, 15 years in particular. You see both private and public prisons where they are basically farming out the inmates.
Halliburton's built most of them.
Yeah, to work for, basically make products for, or do, you know, other services for corporations.
It's like Germany taking over Belgium and making them work in their armaments factories.
Yes.
They wear shoes made out of paper. You know, they don't have toilet paper. They don't have clothes for the winter. They don't turn the heat on. You know, any kind of way they can squeeze money out of these people, they will. I mean, it's sickening.
Plus exploiting their labor now, of course, too. Yeah.
And a lot of these companies in the prison industrial complex, they have paid lobbyists in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
you know, who want the tough laws and tough sentencing to remain as they are. Whereas, you know, Schwarzenegger's talking about releasing everybody who's in on marijuana charges
mm-hmm.
in California, which, you know, would alleviate a lot of the overcrowding.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also meant to warn the rest of us, don't you even think of getting uppity, because this is what will make you go through.
Sure, sure, sure. You know, my wife's from Germany, and, you know, they don't have nearly the crime rate we have here. I mean, they still have prisons, but, I mean, they're not nearly as many people in prisons in their country as or in Europe, in Western Europe in general, as here. And what's interesting, too, is drugs are decriminalized throughout all of Western Europe. Sure. And you don't have also.
Interesting too is they have a lot more social support exactly. when they become unemployed.
Yes.
And you know that's like I ought to be getting $600 a week. I think
mm-hmm.
my unemployment it should last 2 years the way things are going right now.
Well, in Germany, I know
it's not close.
Right.
To that.
I know most about Germany, but I think this is pretty common in all Western and Northern Europe. Is that when you're unemployed, you get unemployment. You get 100% of your salary, your net salary, for 2 years. And then after 2 years...
100% of your take-home?
Yes.
Wow.
And then after two, after 2 years, if you're an older worker within a few years of retirement, they'll just ease you into your pension at that point. Or if you're younger, then basically you can still get that money every week if you go and take some kind of training program to shift careers and stuff.
Wow. You probably have real training, not like here, oh, go study computers.
Right, exactly. You know. And you have free daycare provided by the tax system. You have free health care. So, I mean, this is the thing. That's why they don't have the crime rate we do here. Here, it's dog eat dog. And, of course, on top of that, I mean, the ruling class, they make a profit off of prisoners. I mean, the plantation system obviously doesn't seem to have died here in this country.
And right, isn't that a better expenditure of taxpayers' money to help people with the unemployment than, you know, rather than incarcerate someone or spend $12 billion a month to occupy Iraq and, you know, an equal amount to occupy Afghanistan? But in my presentation on the zines that I gave to the Unitarian Church back October, you know, I compared our mission, you know, I feel like Johnny Appleseed, who also walked around the Midwest 200 years ago, and he disseminated words of truth and wisdom, and that's what I look at these zines. They're opening up a flourishing mind in prison. We get letters from guys who stand on their bunks and read these zines into the air ducts for other prisoners to assimilate in the cell block, and you know it's very touching to me. And you know, for the hardcore religious people, Jesus said it before he was crucified: whatever you do to the poor, the infirmed, or those in prison, you do for me. So I'm just looking at it as a social benefit service.
Yeah, I got a piece of the artwork here, one of your mini pieces that you brought in. It's I picked this one out because I think I can pretty well get the image across verbally over the airwaves here. It shows a television, and on the screen, television's turned on, it says, "Obey your master." And then underneath of it, it has the word media spelled vertically, M-E-D-I-A, and after the first all these letters, M is for mind controlling, E is for everyone's, D is for decisions, and I is for ideologies, and A is for America. So media stands for mind controlling everyone's decisions and ideologies in America. It's like, wow.
Sounds like Fox News to me.
Well, it sounds like all the corporate media, frankly, you know. So, I mean, this is just really exciting. Now, you were saying that you were going to be exhibiting your artwork here later today. Where would that be at?
There's an event in Hyde Park we're going to this afternoon.
Okay.
There's some artists up there. But we're also going to check in on this conference because I know the Books of Prisoner program people are over there. We're going to lay a bunch of zines on them to
Good.
Pass on to prisoners. A couple more things I want to mention. Look at women prisoners. The overwhelming majority of them are abuse victims themselves, and the state heaps on even more hideous abuse. Same thing for the men, basically. And it all boils down to poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It boils down to the fact that we're in a serious class society, racialistly motivated more than any other society in history, except maybe South Africa, but we went the full boat on it with the genocide of the Indians as well.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, they say you got to build from the ground up. Well, plants don't grow unless they start from underground, and that's what the prisons are.
Okay.
And as for Illinois, my heroes of Illinois are the Haymarket Martyrs, who were brilliant propagandists and writers and advocates and talkers. They had journals and newspapers and magazines in several languages. That's why how they built up a huge following. They told people the truth in real time about what is going on for them right now. Another one would be Elijah P. Lovejoy down in southern Illinois, who took on the the slavers down there, and of course our own Fred Hampton.
Oh yes, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was a brilliant man, and
I think
there's,
one of
there's some great video of him on YouTube.
He was only 21 when he was murdered.
Yeah, you know, the most famous prisoner, political prisoner, who has a weekly radio address. I know and has written extensively. Still writes, I think, a weekly column as well as Mumi Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, and, he's terrific.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, considering all the evidence, I mean, you know, internationally recognized, they're keeping him locked up.
Oh, sure.
Probably the most other famous political prisoner other than him would be, of course, Leonard Peltier. But it's amazing that it interests me that they don't restrict his access to stuff, I guess because of his notoriety. But this, you know, the other prisoners, they